Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to your radio, Mushtar FM 89.6. As of today's cultural show, we were thinking nonstop to talk about something extraordinary. And after lots of thinking, we ended up adding prefix and suffix to the show's name. It's multiculturalism. My cleverness is very frightening already. But today, I'm not alone. I have a guest.
Hey, guys. I'm Chris.
How are you doing?
I'm good, good, Badr. Thank you for inviting me.
And let me tell you something, everyone. She has been to 30 countries?
34.
34.
It's an update.
Oh, nice. Very interesting. That's a lot, to be honest. You should be hosting this show instead of me, I think.
But I think if you have an interest about this topic, you can be a host easily.
Yeah, true. For me, besides Hungary, I've been to Turkey. Mm-hmm. If staying the whole time in the airport counts, then...
Okay, you haven't lived.
No.
Okay.
Okay, well, I feel sorry for myself. When I've checked your Instagram account and it says like 30 the other day, and I was like, I mean, how she can manage to do all of that? I'm besides work and going to other countries.
I had just a passion of travel, and my work before the project was quite manageable, and I could work remotely.
Ah.
Yeah, so I managed that. And it's not in a few years. I was traveled since I'm 21, so I'm 27 now.
Yeah,
it's quite a long time for visit these countries. But in some of the countries, I have been living for a while.
Very interesting, really. I wish I could do the same someday.
You can, yeah. You can, of course. So you can listen to our podcasts. We were recording with Anno podcasts about solo traveling.
Yeah.
And how to prepare a solo trip. So probably that will be the main point where you can start.
Okay, of course. Yeah, absolutely. All right, folks, just to make the audience be more familiar about the topic of the show and know a little bit about multiculturalism, gather around and let me introduce you to the party of cultural shenanigans known as multiculturalism. Picture a vibrant festival where diverse cultures, ethnicities, and religions come together like a chaotic but amazing potluck. It's like the world decided to throw a massive bash complete with global dance-offs, fusion cuisine, and a dress code that says express yourself but make it fabulous. Multiculturalism is all about embracing our beautifully diverse human family and having a blast while doing it. So multiculturalism around the world, I think, is implemented differently in various countries, reflecting their specific historical, social, and political contexts. Examples include Canada, which has embraced a policy of official multiculturalism, and Australia, which practices a multiculturalism within a framework of integration. Europe has also grappled with multiculturalism, with countries like the United Kingdom and the Netherlands adopting multicultural policies, but later experiencing debates and policy shifts regarding assimilation and integration. It's important to note that the interpretation and implementation of multiculturalism vary, and ongoing discussions and debates continue to shape its understanding and practice in different societies. So here, I think some of the key features for our audience to understand more about multiculturalism is that it acknowledges and respects the presence of various cultural groups within a society, valuing their unique costumes, languages, beliefs, and traditions. It also promotes the principles of equality, fairness, and social justice for all individuals, regardless of their cultural backgrounds. It aims to ensure that all citizens have equal access to rights, opportunities, and resources, of course. So I think in this sense, multiculturalism seeks to foster an inclusive society where people from diverse cultural backgrounds can participate fully and equally in social, economic, and political spheres. At last, it encourages the integration of diverse communities while respecting their distinct identities at the same time. So then enough with utopian definitions. I really want to know, Chris, if you have diverse society in Russia. Let's start with that.
When you announced the topic of today's show, I dived deep down to the history and to this topic of multiculturalism in Russia. And to be honest, it's so big, it's huge, I can say, because Russia is huge itself. We have a lot of minorities, and nowadays I can say the whole period of Russian history, they have quite hard position in a society, and we can discuss some period of history. Mm-hmm. So I think from the beginning Russia was super diverse. I think the problems starts from that point when you want to put some independent minorities together.
Yeah.
What's the point? To self-defend, or I don't know, to have more territory, which names like in one name, and have a big government. So then I can jump to the period of Soviet Union and big revolution before Soviet Union starts. The politic of our government, they try to keep independence of each minority, but at the same time it was socialism going on, like they try to build socialism.
Yeah.
And here we have a few interesting moments about that time. I think that the definition which is characterized so well our situation in Russia in that time comes from French writer Astolphe de Cusin,
mm-hmm.
and he says, like, Russia is a prison of nations, which is, from my point of view, totally correct. At the beginning of Soviet Union, government tried to give to whole national minorities a lot of rights, but the main plan was developed them somehow and then put them to the one nation,
yeah.
let's say. Because the main goal for Soviet government was to build socialism all yeah. around the world.
Oh, yeah.
And for them, national identity shouldn't exist. So the problem starts also from here.
Yeah.
I mean, probably they're just continuous. We have few facts about politic of Soviet government. So at the beginning, they allow to minorities, national minorities, to have their own traditions, language. But at 1938, they started to translate the whole languages of national minorities to the Cyrillic. And that was the point when they started to lose their own languages.
Yeah.
And next step was Russian language became obligatory everywhere.
Yeah.
Here's also interesting moment. Have you ever heard that the whole Russia speak the same language?
Yeah, well, I didn't have this particular information, but I assumed that they speak the same language.
Yeah, and we even don't have accents. I mean, you probably can recognize that person from this city because, for example, people from Moscow, they have like aggressive A sound.
Yeah.
But it's situation like I can understand them clearly. They don't speak in a different language. They speak the same language. They speak same language.
Yeah.
And I understand them clearly, 100%. I cannot imagine situation when I cannot understand Russian, like person from Russia,
mm-hmm.
In 80% or 90% because they use, I don't know, different words which I don't know. That situation doesn't exist. The whole country speaking one language.
Yeah.
And this incredible situation because even in small countries, people have different accents and languages and different dialects. In Russia, dialects doesn't exist. Probably the most worst case scenario that I can imagine, probably you will not understand clearly person who live in suburbs or who live in a countryside, for example, close to other country, let's say to Ukraine. They speak in like in a mixture of two languages, Russian and Ukrainian. And if you're not familiar with Ukrainian, mm-hmm. you probably cannot understand some of the speech. But it's like no more than 30%. 70% you will understand
yeah.
for sure. But it's the most worst case scenario.
And how about now? Is it still the same case compared to communist times or...?
So, yeah, of course, we have some changes, and these changes, they are not good changes, because a lot of minorities, national minorities, they disappeared, and we have about 10 minorities which already disappeared, and we still have minorities which is about to disappear, let's say.
Yeah. I have lots of friends talking about communist era, and they say that you quoted a French scholar that says Russia is the prison of nations. And what I want to say is that these friends that I have always keep saying that everything said by the Western bank, if you want to say the Western side, is just like a narrative to manipulate our minds and to deface the image, the perfect image of Russia, because they are leftists. They used to believe that and say, because we know that at that time we had two poles, like the Eastern Pole, which was ruled by the Soviet Union, and the other by the USA. And everything that comes from the Western Pole about Eastern Pole is just an attempt to manipulate, as I said, and deface the noble ideology or the cause of Soviet Union. And one thing that I want to mention as well is that when you say that it's the prison of all nations, I can feel you, because I've read a little bit about socialism and communism ideas. And they always go with this idea that we need to liberate people from the bourgeoisie, and anything that comes in between is just like a distraction from the real struggle that we need to have. So if you are like a minority that you want to preserve your identity, okay, but we have a real cause that we need to fight for. Your identity or your language doesn't matter. There are other things that matter the most, I think, if you get me.
Yeah, it's one of the most popular saying of Lenin. He says, interests of socialism is more important than national self-determination.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, this philosophy is really wrong.
Yeah.
Because everything that's related to unification of anything, for me, it means something wrong. Because you cannot unify people. They should be different, because that's the beauty of the life.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, about these minority ethnic groups that you have in Russia, do they still have the ability to preserve their own native language, or it's used only inside their houses, and when they go out, the only language they must use is Russian language?
As I said, the most speakable language in Russia, it's Russian. You probably know that Soviet Union wasn't only Russia. It was some other countries which is around us, like Lithuania, Latvia, Poland. And nowadays, they really hate Russian.
Yeah.
I mean, Russian language, and also Russian attitude and Russian government. I hope not Russians, because we don't have anything to do with them. But, you know, I understand the sources of this hate, because quite a long time you were satellite of the main government, of the main country, and you don't have a lot of rights to live your life, independent life. You have rights to be mad of this big boss.
Yeah.
Nowadays, national minorities that we have in Russia can tell their names. It's Ауляты, Чулымцы, Ороки, Тазы, Ижоры, Энцы, Сету, Водь, Кереки, and more, of course. But this one, the one of the most popular one. But it's real national minority. This national minority has less, each of them has less than 500 person inside their minority. About languages, I don't think so they're able to have their own alphabet or something like that, or literature, but of course they're able to speak. But here's the other question, who really needs to speak in that language? Because if you live in Russia and everything around you in Russian, and it's no needs to communicate in your own language, probably inside the family they can somehow keep this language and traditions. But also it depends on the lifestyle of the family. If these ethnic groups lives in north part, if, for example, they still live in yurt, it's kind of tent, but it's not similar to camp tent.
Yeah.
It's a type of house, a national one. They build it from the skin of the animals, and that building material, I mean, natural building material. Mm. So if, for example, they live in that kind of accommodation in the middle of nowhere, just mountains around. And if they continue hunting, if they continue keep their own traditions, probably in that circumstances they are able to keep their own language. But also the problem is, like, as far we live in a country where government have some rules about behavior of the people, like each kid needs to go to school, or I don't know, each family has to be registered somewhere. We have special documents which regulates the life of a national minority, but it depends on the region. In that, in one region, it can be regulated well. In other regions, it can be regulated super bad. These national minorities, as far as I know, they have an access to education, to medical care, to all institutions, social institutions that they like regular Russian people. But the problem is not everybody, I guess, so wants to give their kid to school. Probably some of them, they want to keep a kid at home. Probably they do some, I don't know, like home education or education related to their traditions, etc. But it's a hard question because they are part of society. They are part of population, but at the same time, they should have autonomy. They should keep their own national traditions and national culture.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they located in rural areas, and a lot of these areas, it's a national parks or some areas that have a lot of resources. And also, we have big companies which is affiliate with government, Russian government. And if this big company wants to build or wants to find, let's say, a new source of oil or, I don't know, of fish, if it's a seaside, they will not look at the population of these minor nations. They just don't care, you know, and they will start to build fabrics, or they will start to dig at the same place where they live, and doesn't matter that they were living here for 100 years. So climate changing also affect them so much because they still use natural resources for their lives, for built accommodation, for built houses, for eat, etc., and even for make clothes. So a lot of factors that affect them, that's the main problem today, I guess so. One of the biggest problem, this is the government that also don't care too much about them.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it's so big problem because if they will disappear, it means we don't care about culture itself. Because if you let this minority, national minority, disappear, it means you don't pay attention about culture at all, because culture could be more like fruitful if inside this big culture each minor nation has own place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe what gives the power to these companies to be intrusive on these ethnic communities is that they are given the power by the government, because I think the government cares more about the profit than its people, let's say.
I think it's a bitch of our government, our country.
Yeah.
Our government doesn't care about people at all.
Yeah. Really, it's very sad. And especially when it comes to cultures, because someone's culture is the only important thing that you can use to define who you are. So if you take that away from them, who are they? There would be no one. So it's very sad to know this about the Russian policies regarding these groups. But I want to talk about you. I mean, since you've been to these countries, I'm curious to know what are the special things about these countries, or have you noticed any cultural diversity in the same place, or maybe?
Probably it's not like cultural diversity inside the country, but it's diverse from my culture, let's say. It's Brazil, because it's like different world for me. It starts from dishes or drinks that they have, and this ocean culture, this slow motion culture, and enjoying the life culture.
Yeah,
they really different from other part of the world where I've been, because people there, they like smiling all the time.
Yeah.
They're dancing. They're spending time nearby ocean. They drink some hard drinks and have fun. And also, I think I can name Jordan, because it's one of the most unusual country, because it's Arabic country.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of experience with Arabic countries, just Jordan and Turkey.
Yeah.
But Turkey is not Arabic. I mean,
yeah. It's
Muslim country,
yeah. Let's
say.
True.
Jordan is quite different than other countries that I've been. And also I can name USA, because the USA, like, I cannot compare it with any other country. The USA has different vibe, a lot of religions inside, like, I don't know, a lot of different rules from states to states.
Yeah.
A different attitude of people, diverse nature,
yeah. Diverse
traditions, diverse food, even if it's fast food everywhere.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about, do you have like understanding about yourself? What kind of culture do you have? What kind of national identity do you have?
I can start by saying, for those who don't know, I live in Morocco. And in this country, we have very diverse communities in the same country. But the division that I can say is between two. We have Berbers and we have Arabs. So just to get back a little bit in history, the North African region had only Berber residents. But with the appearance of Islam in Middle East, they tried to spread the religion and everything. So they choose to go west, which means they came until they reached Morocco. I mean, we accepted Islam as a religion because somehow it was going along with our culture before Islam. It was a little bit similar. So we accepted the religion tolerantly. But the problem was with some kind of Arabs that came with bad intentions, with the intention of using the land and everything. And they considered the Berber culture as a low culture and the Arab culture as the high one. They were always looking at us in a downgrading way, let's say. So as myself, I belong to this Berber tribe in the north of Morocco. I've witnessed this, even though we are in the 21st century, we still witness some behaviors from Arabs, let's say, because they have this stereotype in Morocco that all those who live in cities are Arabs, and those who live in mountains, in rural areas, are Berbers, even though it's completely wrong. I mean, I live in the city, I work in the city, and still I'm not Arabic, I'm not Arab, I'm Berber. And this is the problem that I have in Morocco when it comes to this identity crisis and identity harmony with other communities and other identities. So I think this is the main problem that we have. And in addition to that, we also have the ruling system. They see themselves as Arabs. So you can imagine the treatment that they could do to non-Arabs, which is somehow neglecting all those who are non-Arabs. And just recently, they've started to improve the place of Berber language and everything. Because first, long time ago, it was the first language of the country was Arabic, then French, because it's a Francophone country. It was colonized by French once. But recently, they've tried to more consideration to this language, to the language of indigenous people of North Africa. I think right now, I'm not saying we are at a perfect position when it comes to diversity and being looked at equally as Arabs, but it's better than before. Of course, as you mentioned before, you talked about the accents in Russia. You said that there is only one accent and one language that is used in the whole of Russia. But the case in Morocco, we have Moroccan dialect. And in every region, there is a certain accent. It's enriching, culturally speaking. And here, I must say that the media came to standardize, let's say, one accent over the whole accents. They made Moroccan dialect with the accent that is used in Casablanca, because that is the biggest city in Morocco. They made it the standard accent in the whole Morocco. So maybe if you go somewhere using a North Moroccan accent, you will be mocked on, because I think the media has a hand in this, the sad thing about our media in Morocco. But generally speaking, what I experience as a Moroccan is I always have this cultural shock, even in my country. I mean, without even going outside the country, I still have this cultural shock when I go to a different city. It's totally different culturally speaking. Yeah, I think this is the main idea about Morocco. Generally speaking, we are diverse, but the way the government is dealing with this diversity is bad so far.
But you think why are they dealing so bad? They don't want to pay attention about that, or they just want to see one unified nation?
As I said before, they always think about identities in Morocco in a binary opposition, like there is an upper culture and there is a lower culture. So that's how they identified us, as the lower culture. They believe that Arabic, since it's the language of the Holy Quran, our religion, then they presume that this is the highest culture and it should be dominating the region in Morocco, regardless, even on the expense of you losing your own identity and your own language.
And, for example, if I will ask you who you will say I'm Berber?
Yeah, proudly.
And what does it mean? What traditions you can name, or what kind of Berber identity you can explain?
Yeah, of course. I can say that we have totally different language than Arab. And I'm saying this because based on traditions that we use that are different from Arabs, which is food, our way of clothing. We have different literature. Our songs are mostly about resistance, about patriotism, about love, as I said, about taking care of your mother. I think when it comes to this, we make a respectful place for our mothers. I don't know if you've noticed the World Cup. Morocco reached the semi-final in Qatar. And every time the national team wins, they bring their mothers to the pitch to celebrate with them. Yeah, that's how I can describe you, the love of mother.
But it's not like matriarchy,
let's say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to speak about that too. It's the special thing about our culture is that it's somehow matriarchal, because back in the day, women used to be war leaders, used to resist the Arab invasion and lead armies full of men.
Really?
Yeah,
in a Berber minority or nation.
Yeah, because we were a lot of people.
Wow.
I mean, I can give you a name. Her name is Dihia. It's Dhia. She was a war leader, and the first university built in the whole world is in Morocco, and that was built by a woman.
Wow. Father, you opened my eyes. I've never heard about that.
Yeah, the first university established even before Oxford and Harvard and everything. Yeah, it was built in Morocco by a woman. And that's all. Women back in the day always had these rules outside their houses as well as in their houses. So maybe I can say they used to work more than men, because they used to take care of their kids at home, but at the same time they go outside, they farm, they take care of their animals. I think this is pretty much it when it comes to the culture in general. And it's very sad that a lot of people, even in Morocco, don't know about these things, and they always try to somehow demonize the culture, and they say that you should be united under one language, I think, as in Russia, because it's the language of Islam and everything. Yeah, we respect the religion, but at the same time, I need to preserve my culture.
Why they put the question like you have to choose? Why you cannot keep both? I think here's also situation with Russia. If you can take care about this national minority, it won't be a problem. But our government think like national minority, there is a problem itself because they want to be independent. And for you, does it make sense to have multicultural country, or it makes sense to have a lot of different countries with their own identity and their own culture next to each other, yeah, rather than have just one form of government like federation?
Yeah. But just to answer your question, I mean, with all seriousness, I'm not for having our own country just for us separated from Morocco, because economically speaking, we only rely on tourism. We don't have other sources of income. So that would be a problem if we got our own country separated from Morocco.
But don't you think like it's a problem because you with Morocco? Because if it's one country, so sometimes government just divide the sphere between regions. Like this region famous for wine, this region famous for sea, this region famous for, I don't know, like dessert. And tourists going around, let's say, from region to region, and by that they can see the whole country. But for them it doesn't matter that your wine region, let's say, also has a sea, seaside, and they don't let you to grow in sea coast, sea resort sphere, because you will take this privilege from the other region.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally understand. I see that, but to answer your question, I don't see ourselves having our own country because we're not good even with each other. I mean, as an ethnic group, historically speaking, we've always been in dispute with each other. So I don't conjure the idea of being a separate state. I would like to live in a country someday that respects my identity and my language as well as I respect theirs too, and we will be seen equally. And I don't have a problem with the government, but with the policies that they produce that I feel has some kind of a discrimination towards other communities, especially us. I just want to talk about an incident that happened to me. I got offended because I felt that I was strange in the country I live in. Is when I was studying in the university, which I think you might already know is a little bit distant from the place where I live. And the city where the university, they do speak Moroccan dialect. And the other day I was going into a clothing shop with my friend to buy something, and we were having a conversation. He is Berber too, so obviously I would speak Berber with him. That's normal. But then when another client was in the shop, he heard us speaking Berber. He started yelling like, "You should speak Arabic because you are in a different city. We don't speak Arabic here. We are afraid that right now you're insulting us and we don't know about that." Like, what the hell? I was just started looking at him and I said, "It's already in the constitution, so you should have your case with them, not with me." And I left the shop without buying anything.
But I think it's probably a personal problem.
Maybe. There are some people who are racist about this kind of stuff. They always are chauvinistic.
But also this chauvinistic mood, it comes from government, because if they take care about national minorities, it's like not even a question to be afraid of national minority or to be afraid of different culture, different language.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you actually know that that community you are offending have contributed greatly to the independence of Morocco and everything. So I think, I don't know, somehow I feel sad about this, because the resistance history that we have in this region and the sacrifices our people have made for this country to be independent. And now a person that we share lots of things in common offending me because I speak a different language. That makes me a little bit sad, but I don't blame him. Maybe I blame his community, maybe the media, maybe the educational system that has taught him to think that way.
Yeah, just poor mindset.
Yeah, exactly.
I asked you about this identity because for me, to be honest, it's a hard question because Russia, it's a mixture of historical periods from like imperial time, then Soviet time, then new Russia time. Yeah. And it's a mixture of everything. And I think if you will ask just regular person from the street, I mean, in Russian, who are you or what does it mean to be Russian, he will struggling with answer because probably the answer will be related to the era when this person were born. If it's like middle age, like 30 plus person, he will talk about end of Soviet Union and the beginning of new Russia. Probably this person will name some traditions like New Year, like family gathering and New Year. And if you ask like retired people, my grandma, of course, she will say something about her past in Soviet Union, like, I don't know, fabrics, this working shifts, 12 hours, exhausting time, but also good memories from her youngest age. I don't know what kind of traditions she could name. It's a little bit hard for me to say, but she will relate everything with Soviet Union. Yeah, for sure, because the whole her life was during Soviet Union. And if you ask me, I will name something from New Russia because I don't remember Soviet Union at all because I was born after. And I will name something from new traditions from New Russia, like gathering together in the new year.
Yeah.
To be honest, this New Year tradition, it's like my personal opinion, and I heard that from other people who were investigating of traditions of New Russia.
Yeah.
Because just for people to understand why I'm talking New Russia, because when Soviet Union fell down and in 1991, then 1991 is the beginning of new Russia. The history of Russia starts from 1991.
Yeah.
I have my personal opinion that the main tradition of new Russia, even if it comes from Soviet Union past, it's a new year. It's a date or like period of time where gathering together, people go to friend's house, to family house, and they spend a lot of time together. I think we have one of the longest vacation in the world. We have around 10, between 10 and 14 days of vacation in this winter period.
Oh, that's too
much. And the whole country is celebrating somehow.
Yeah.
With alcohol or without, with salads or without, with going to ski or without. It's really good feelings I relate to this celebration. Like brings you back to your childhood.
Yeah.
Like from childhood, we have a tradition when Ded Moroz, which is a Russian Santa Claus, brings your gifts and the whole family celebrating together, friends in the house, that stuff. I think the problem is hiding in our Soviet past because this washing of Russian nationality was also part of building socialism and communism. They should unify everybody for build this big idea.
Yeah.
And also with this national minorities, they were fighting with Russian nation. Like, what is this Russian nation? I can identify Russian people as a Slavic people, like people who came from Slavic nation.
Mm-hmm.
Probably they're Russians. They can be called Russians. because other national minorities which exist in Russia, they are separate minorities, separate national ethnic groups. And since we cannot understand who we are, we have big problems now because our government manipulate a lot with our opinion. Mm-hmm. And they said, like, we should protect Russians, for example, in Ukraine.
Yeah.
But are you sure they are Russians? Like, are you sure they are not, like, from Ukraine?
Yeah.
Or Ukraine is a part of Russia, was before, but now it's separate. It's a separate country. You cannot deny, like, Ukraine has same age as a country as a new Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm saying new Russia because I think we should left the whole terrible past behind us and start new Russia, normal, free, independent. But I don't refuse the whole things like a culture, like historical wins or historical important events which happened already. I don't deny them. And of course, some of them, they should be kept. But we should think about meaning of this, of these events. Like, if we won the Second World War, it means we saved the whole world from the Nazi. But doesn't mean, like, we should now creating new Nazi or idea that somewhere new Nazi exists.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we won. Okay, everybody is admitting. We won, that's it. We had plenty of compositors, plenty of poets, plenty of artists from Russia. Okay, all of them, they are somehow living in Russia or, I don't know, probably they weren't Russians, but they were work in Russia or somehow, let's admit it, let's keep their pieces of art and let's include them to our history of Russian art if they are really in there.
Yeah.
But stop saying like the whole world canceling Russian culture.
Yeah.
Because we don't have any clue what is this Russian culture. Is it Soviet culture or is it culture from like imperialism?
So it's totally different.
It's totally, of course, it's totally different. The art before revolution and after revolution, it's completely different art. What is definition of Russian art?
Okay. Yeah.
Or probably this is icons which were drawn by Andrei Rublev,
yeah,
even before socialism exists, you know. This is true Russia. What is this true Russia, you know? People don't have any clue because mixture of everything, of this huge historical periods, which were full of events and great people and political movements also. Nowadays, it's just chaos and none of Russians can say what is this Russia and what is this. Because me, personally, I'm more close to ancient Russia than to Soviet past.
Yeah.
And what to choose? I don't know. Because, of course, we cannot deny like we have a Soviet past. It's a huge period of our history. And how to deal with all this information,
yeah,
I still don't know. But I know we should know the whole periods and we should somehow decide at the end who we are and identify ourselves somehow. I don't know, because it probably won't be name Russia, won't be Russian nations.
Yeah.
Probably it's something different.
So I think you're not proud of the Soviet Union culture.
No,
and
I'm against
arts.
Soviet Union culture because for me, at the first place, when I'm talking about Soviet past, I see a lot of violence, I see a lot of lie, I see a lot of bad things rather than free education, free accommodation.
But even though I can see that a lot of people, Russian people, and I think Putin is included, are a little bit nostalgic to the past times.
He rebuilding Soviet Union nowadays.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, true. When you said that it's quite different, I can resonate because from what I've seen before about the Soviet Union culture, literature, let's say, and paintings and everything, I think everything was about the collectiveness of people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Like they washed of Russian nation.
Yeah. They try to get rid of anything that is related to individuality or yourself as a person, as a unity. Somehow they say that maybe talking about individuality or yourself is a way to distract all the things that we've built. Because if every one of us right now is just trying to defend himself or herself and supporting this I mentality, there will be no Soviet Union later on. And that's what I've seen in the Eastern Germany before. I've watched a movie. Maybe you've watched it before. It's called Never Look Away. It's a really good one. It's a German one. It talks about the Eastern art, about an artist that was working in Eastern Europe and his story and his adventures that he went through to move to the Western Germany, and which is something portrayed in the movie as a better place than the Eastern one. I think that's the idea that I understand from what you said, and it resonates to the what I've watched in the movie and what I know. Let's move a little bit to West. And what I've seen about the UK mainly is that even though they celebrate this multicultural diversity and everything, but I can notice that there is still some gaps when it comes to unifying all cultures under one pot, that every culture can represent itself and live in harmony with other cultures. I don't think it's just a myth somehow in the UK. I would give you just an example with London, the capital, and they have this small communities in London, and each community seems to be hating the other communities. Mainly, somehow, the hatred can be traced between black people and white people, because they always see black people there as intruders to their own country that threats maybe the whiteness of the country. The implementation of this idea in the UK seems a little bit a failure. Yeah, even the UK struggling. But maybe not as much as Russia and Morocco, maybe. I don't know. We haven't been there to judge. But they do have this struggle too in the UK. And I've seen this comedian. His name is Trevor Noah. He was always talking about this racism towards black people. There's this guy that starts shouting at black people, saying that these bloody black people, they came from a certain African country and they try to bring their bloody language and their bloody culture and try to take all over the place. And then Trevor Noah was like, that seems British to me. Like, even the British people did the same. They went to Africa and India and took their culture and language and tried to take all over the place. So it's like now reversing the rules. Now who's doing the conquest? Just like a joke, let's say. It can represent you the struggle that these two communities mainly have, and between Indians too.
If we will talk about the USA, probably they're dealing better than others with that multicultural stuff, because the foundation of the USA and the policy of the USA, they trying to attract as many people as they can from all around the world. Mm-hmm. And the USA, I think it's one of the most diverse country. Yeah, and also they have this talent visa, startup visa, and yeah, you not easily, but you can apply and move to the USA.
Yeah.
And they trying to collect the smartest brains inside the USA. I think that's the main point that we can pick up from their policy about different cultures, multiculturalism. But also we should admit they have a problem with this Mexican immigration and the politics that Trump were doing about restrict immigrations from Mexico. But probably it's a problem of Mexico, which doesn't have good circumstances for life.
As you said, they try to make this diversity in their communities, but somehow they are creating other problems to other countries, because if they are picking only the smart ones, I mean, other countries will be the dumbest countries on earth.
But other countries should take care about living circumstances in their countries.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, true. Even in Morocco, most of doctors, scientists go to France most of the time, or USA or Canada? Those are the destinations. And as you said, because the country doesn't provide suitable circumstances for these people to stay.
It causes brain immigration.
Yeah, true. But I think in the US, per se, they do have to these racial problems, and we can witness them maybe in their movies. Somehow it's kind of systemic in the speech of politicians. They always try to address Americans with their origins. So they always try to divide these communities. And another implication of this crisis is the wall that they want to build in the USA. I don't know how far they've reached in building that wall. Have they done it already? Or
wall between Mexico?
Yeah, Mexico. It was an idea established by Donald Trump.
It was frozen for some period.
Ah, nice.
But it's not sure.
Yeah, because he was always stressing on that. And I think that's the main reason maybe he got elected and won the elections. He tried to use this thing against the immigrants that, okay, stop. We don't need any more immigrants. We should build a wall and should be huge.
I think the only country who doesn't have any problems with multiculturalism, it's like San Marino or Liechtenstein.
San Marino?
Yeah, it's like little country inside Italy.
Oh.
You know, it's like super small, probably the size of Nyíregyháza or even smaller.
It's a country.
Yeah, it's a country. Also Liechtenstein, you know Liechtenstein?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a super small country, and I guess so. They just don't pay attention about this kind of problem, or they don't have this kind of problem.
But are they diverse? Do they have multiple communities?
I mean, they don't have problem because they don't diverse.
Well, maybe that's why. Okay.
The population of San Marino, I will say it again, San Marino, this is the smallest country in the world, which located inside Italy. The population in 2021 was 33,000.
33,000.
So I guess they don't have these problems about multiculturalism because they don't diverse at all.
Well, maybe that's the reason. Yeah, true.
I think any other countries somehow will struggle with that.
Yeah, but I think maybe the best example you can think of when it comes to this multicultural implementation and diversity is the Canadian example. Yeah, I can feel that they are too nice and tolerant with each other. It doesn't matter. It's like a nation built on immigration. The immigration is always open if you want to travel to Canada, as long as, I mean, you don't have like a criminal record and a good citizen and you feel like you want to contribute to this nation, I think they will welcome you with open arms. I don't know if you've heard this before. It is used in English. Sometimes they say, don't be Canadian, or he's trying to be Canadian, meaning he's trying to be nice. But I can summarize with one question.
Mm-hmm.
Since we are living in Hungary, how do you feel about Hungary when it comes to cultural diversity?
I think you can feel cultural diversity if you in Budapest, in any other places like Nyíregyháza, Eger, Tokaj and Pécs,
mm-hmm.
and other.
Yeah.
I don't think so you can feel it because most of the population, they are Hungarian. But I've noticed a lot of people from Transylvania. I don't know, is it correct to call them gypsies? But mm-hmm. they're people from the tribes which moves a lot. And I can see them here. I'm not sure that they are from Hungary or the Magyars.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only diversity that I can see here
in
the real Hungary besides mm-hmm. Budapest.
I didn't go to Budapest yet. And to other cities, I think. Main city is here, Nyíregyháza. But I can say that somehow they are tolerant with other communities. Okay, this is it, everyone. Thank you so much for staying with us this long. I hope that the topic got your interest as much as it got ours. And thank you, Chris, for accepting the invitation.
Thank you for inviting me. It was really interesting to speak with you, Badr, discuss all these topics, and I wish everybody to know their identity, their cultural identity, because it's important for build yourself and for identified others and for build peaceful relationship with other nations and cultures.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for coming today. And I thank our audience too for their loyalty. We will come back to you with interesting topics. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.